So, this morning, I imagine again that many of us, as fast as things have been moving, have been starting to adjust a little bit to the idea of staying in place more, being at home more, or have still been trying to think about how we stay in place and adjust to that. As I mentioned earlier, I encourage us to look at ways that we can be mindful of having sacred space together with God. And that sort of follows advice that people have been giving for how to make sure that you have rhythms for all sorts of things in your life. Still doing things as close to as you did when you would go to the office or go on errands or go to visit people as you can, even if you have to mainly stay at home. And so again, there's things like making sure you get up at the same time, take a shower, set a schedule, do your meals the same way as much as possible, all of that. And I think that that's true and very good, but we've also probably, many of us, learned that we're having to have some sense of flexibility and manage our expectations. I know Wendy and I tried really hard to set a really particular type of schedule with our kids for their homework and things like that, and within a few days we realized that that really wasn't working very well because we had our own things ourselves that kept us from being as present with the kids to support them at the same time every single day. And so we've moved more to, we're going to make sure we spend this much time on certain activities at some point during the day, even if it's not 9 a.m. this, 10 a.m. that, 11 a.m. that, whatever it may be. And I don't know, some of you may be going through some of the same circumstances. This week, in some of the free time that I did have, I noticed that there was kind of a fun meme that was going around for people where they were talking about their expectations about sort of the apocalypse, right? That thing that makes life stop and change completely from what we normally think it is. And so people were sending out pictures of, this is what I thought my outfit for the end of days would look like versus this is what it ended up being like. And that's so that same thing, kind of playing with expectations, having this sense of it was going to be big and dramatic, and then having those things kind of changed from what we thought it would be. And so we've got here an outfit of someone who's basically geared up, looks like, to go into battle in a desert wasteland versus someone who's in their pajamas. So what they thought the end of the world outfit was going to look like, and then what it actually has ended up being. Here's another funny example. Right? What they thought their apocalypse outfit was going to look like, again, all geared up like they're going to have to fight their way out of a total disaster, versus they're wrapping themselves up in toilet paper, I guess apparently taking the tact of, this will help protect me from the virus, and not, I have to ration my use of toilet paper because everyone's hoarding it and I don't know when I'll get it next. But either way, we have all of these examples, again, of where our expectations are different. We think things are going to be one way, again, maybe even especially that things are going to be really dramatic. And then we adjust to things being a little bit different, feeling, for many of us, maybe like, well, I'm supposed to just stay at home. I'm not like one of those essential workers. I'm not going to the hospital. How do I still support people, even if it feels maybe like I'm a little bit helpless, feels like I'm a little bit stuck, feels like I don't know exactly what it is that I have to offer from what I'm doing. I don't know how many people have been feeling like that, or at the very least feeling stir crazy and kind of stuck in a rut. But again, this is its own type of adventure, but it's a very different type of adventure than many people have been initially expecting. And so I actually think that these comparisons, as strange as they are, give us an interesting angle into understanding our story of Jesus and Lazarus this morning. Oh, sorry. They give us an interesting understanding of Jesus and Lazarus this morning, because they're actually, as much as we see the amazing miracle of Jesus raising somebody from the dead, which you would think that's about as dramatic as you can possibly get. There's even more going on in the story, although it's subtle, and it has to do more with things that might not feel exciting, dramatic, powerful, miraculous, like raising someone from the dead, but actually is about something that might be discouraging, a failure, a risk, and something, though, that we still need to wrestle with, and I think that God would want us to see and understand in these verses that we can apply in our own lives. See, in John, this story comes at a very unique place. As we saw, Jesus is told by his disciples as he's going to Bethany, which is very close to Jerusalem, which is kind of the center of power for the Israelites at the time, for the Jewish people, that the Jewish rulers have been thinking about killing him. They've been seeing what Jesus has been doing kind of from afar and starting to be suspicious of the popularity that he's getting, and so they've been thinking about killing him. And in fact, after Jesus does this particular raising of the dead, they get all of the leaders together and say, "What are we doing here? We're letting him continue to gain all this popularity. Everyone's going to be so excited about him, and that puts us, our power, at great risk." Some of it was reasonable, we'll talk about in a second, and some of it may have just been competitive. And so Jesus essentially knows, and as he's talking to his disciples, that when he goes and goes close to Jerusalem and does a miracle like this to kind of kick the hornet's nest, that risk of his death is right around the corner. And in the other Gospels, we don't see this story. In the other Gospels, the thing that seems to tip the scales where Jesus knows, "I have to accept that people are going to want to kill me because of the radical message of love and inclusion that I'm giving, the radical challenge to traditional ways of exercising power that I'm giving," is his triumphal entry at Palm Sunday, and then turning over the money changers' tables and disrupting worship at the temple during this incredibly busy, crowded, important time of Holy Week. The Gospels essentially say that's when the Jews knew that they were going to make sure that they tried to arrest Jesus and ultimately kill him. In John, he puts that story more at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. So some people think that there were two temple cleansings. Some people think that the Gospel writers took the events of Jesus' life and put them in the order that made the most meaning for the overall understanding of Jesus that they were trying to convey to their audience. Either way, for John, he saw that it was this challenge of life and death, not just in a physical sense, but also, what is the true meaning of life? Not just our pulse, not just our vital signs. What type of life do we live when we are alive? That ultimately pushed the Jewish authorities over the edge into saying, we cannot tolerate Jesus anymore. And that's different than the other Gospels. In the other Gospels, we do still see a challenge of power, but it's a slightly different emphasis about the meaning of religious authority. And that distinction of how are we going to live our life, not just as people who are organic beings walking around doing things, but we're going to have a certain character of life, is not always the most dramatic thing, as much as we see Jesus doing a dramatic thing to raise Lazarus to life from death. But it's the undercurrent of the story. It's the things that we might miss if we were focusing only on the fact that Lazarus came back to life. And it really is true that Jesus knew by living a certain character of life and by manifesting it in a more dramatic way, like by raising Lazarus from the dead, that he was not only bringing someone out of the tomb, but that he was functionally putting the nail in his own coffin when it came to the Jewish authorities. And when we notice this, it might actually occur to us that in some ways for Jesus, he may have seen, in fact, the raising of Lazarus to be the easiest thing of this whole ordeal. Because he needs to prep himself to die soon if he's going to go close to Jerusalem and challenge the authorities this way. He needs to figure out a way to get across to Lazarus, to Mary, to Martha, to the disciples. As they're focusing on this time of mourning for Lazarus, as they're potentially going to focus on the power of the miracle that Jesus does. That when Jesus is gone, how are they going to continue to live full lives? What have they understood from their encounters with Jesus already about what it means to live full lives, not just in the dramatic, miraculous moments, but in the undercurrent moments, in the behind-the-scenes moments, in the moments that go unnoticed and that we can often take for granted? The small moments that Jesus still wants to be full of life and full of power and full of meaning. This reminds me a lot of how things often go in kids' movies. I've been watching a lot of those, as you might imagine, during a time of staying at home a lot and bonding with my kids. We've been doing a family movie night on a fair number of nights after dinner. And there's one movie in particular that I saw that I think gave a great example of what it is that happens in these kids' movies that demonstrate what I'm talking about. See, because kids' movies are really great at bringing out things for kids that are exciting and get them on the edge of their seats and wanting to cheer or hunch back dramatically in tension and fear, and it's that action side, that goofy side, that dramatic side that draws the kids into some of these movies. But we as adults often come away looking at different moments, quiet moments, subtle moments. And they both are ways of conveying these same themes of how do we live a full life? How do we mature and grow up over time? How do we have connections that will stand the test of time and that will stand difficult circumstances? But again, kids are more drawn to the dramatic side, and adults maybe to something else. So hopefully you can see this a little bit on the screen behind me, but this is from the movie Onward. So first, we see the scenes that draw the kids in, right? A magical dragon being made from the rubble of their school. And the poor elf is completely scared and frightened. Here's the dragon again being made from the actual painting on the wall, the mural of their own mascot for the school. Mom and a flying manticore coming in to try to save the day as the kids start to battle the dragon. Having to run away from flames and then flying over cliffs, over water in the most dramatic and striking way that you could possibly get, right? So this is the thing that draws kids in. These dramatic things like the miracles of Jesus. And yet, at the same time, God is giving us this undercurrent of what makes our lives meaningful, even in quiet moments. There's a moment in this movie where one of the kids is thinking about, what did I want to do with my dad? What was going to make my life meaningful if I could connect with him? And his dad had died. They sort of get him back in this movie, and they're trying to get him back all the way, at least for a day. And he looks at, what is it in my life that I thought was going to be most important? So he has a list, says, play catch, take a walk, have a heart-to-heart, laugh together, do a driving lesson, and ultimately share my life with him. All of those things seem so normal, so everyday for many of us. And those are the things, though, that I think as adults in particular we notice, yeah, those are also things that as normal, as everyday, as mundane, as they can seem from the outside, especially compared to a giant dragon attacking a bunch of people in a city. They have so much meaning. They're the things that leave a really deep impression on us, that make us feel most connected to each other. And that's kind of the catharsis of this movie as well, is that he realizes, I didn't get to do those things with my dad, but I did get to do them with my older brother. And that made my life incredibly meaningful. That's given me power to make choices and to do things now at this stage in my life that had I not had anyone like that, I never would have been able to do. And so we have, again, that reminder that it's not just the super dramatic times in life. It's not just the most dramatic things that we're going to be doing that are where God shows up or where God wants us to live as God's people and to do things that are meaningful. It's in even those quiet times, those things where we feel stuck, or too normal, or even less than that, just boring. And while we know some of us are on the front lines in something that is dramatic and changing our lives, and we are so thankful for those people, and so impressed with the way that they are showing a servant's heart to be able to help those who are being most directly affected by this crazy outbreak, some of us are at home and feeling like the best thing we can do is just stay away from people, which does not feel dramatic, does not feel maybe like it's really doing something that means a lot. And yet I think that that's a challenge that we can all take during the season, is that in fact, even in our quiet moments, even in our things where we feel powerless, even in our things where we feel like what I'm being asked to do is boring, what I'm being asked to do is not impactful, what I'm being asked to do makes me feel stuck in a rut, God wants us to be there and show up. God wants us to see that God is with us and will give us meaning and ways to have impact on people that maybe don't look dramatic and miraculous, but are really meaningful. And this really comes into relief with the Sanhedrin. And we can contrast their response to what we saw at the hinge point of our psalm this morning. The Sanhedrin are seen as God's representatives for the people. They have amazing power that they can use in their response to whatever is happening. They could use it to support and empower Jesus. They could use it to tear Jesus down like they do. But they take their dramatic, impressive, powerful positions and end up doing something that's not that meaningful, that they would be chided for in the lens of history. Because they think about, how can we compromise? How can we do the thing that for us is absolutely safest, even if it negates impact? How can we essentially, right, collude with the Roman Empire so that somebody who they think might be challenging won't seem like a problem anymore? And we show them that we can kind of nuzzle up to them, and then they won't take things away from us. And of course, for John, this was especially ironic and sad because he writes his gospel after the Romans had, no matter all the efforts that the Jewish authorities had given to make Rome feel like they were on their side, to appease Rome, to do whatever Rome wanted them to do, ultimately Rome came in when a few people rebelled and not only put down the rebellion, but in fact destroyed the entire temple and did a whole new diaspora of Jewish people all over the world. And so they took a position that could have been feeling dramatic and important and instead essentially lowered it by having a mindset that was more about, how can we just watch out for the easiest, safest thing? Whereas Jesus was an outsider. And Jesus could do miraculous, dramatic things, but was never going to have the same type of access as these authorities. And in everything that Jesus did, he was not looking to elevate himself to the position of those authorities, to have power in that way, but instead to serve, to put himself at risk, to do things that, while sometimes were dramatic, could also, if they were dramatic, the outcome was not glory, but danger. And at the same time, do things that were quiet, that seemed mundane, but that filled people's lives with relational meaning and empowerment to people who were even more outsiders than he was. Things like dinners, like having his feet washed and washing the feet then of his disciples later in return. And so, like the psalm says, we are given the amazing power and forgiveness and love of God that fills our lives so that we're able to serve God. Being a servant may feel like it's not very dramatic. Being a servant may feel like it puts us on the sidelines. And yet, we see that that is the spirit that permeates all of what Jesus did. A servant mindset, a willingness to risk, even in the most dramatic things. And the dramatic things always being counterbalanced with something that was what daily life was going to be and how people could find meaning there. And so that's what we're invited to do, to have this amazing power of God in our lives. And even if we're in pajamas and not armor, even if we're sitting at home and not running around on an outward physical adventure, even if we're feeling like this whole thing we're always trying to catch up with, and we don't know what exactly to do or if the thing that we have as an idea is the right thing, God is with us, and God wants to be full of those moments for us so that we can see those ways to do the things that are most impactful and most meaningful, even in the quiet moments, even in the still moments, even in the small moments. I invite you to think about what are those ways that God's inviting you to have important connection with those around you who you love, but you are separate from. What are those ways that God might show you to do even small support of people who are having to do a little bit extra right now? You may not be able to do a giant food drive or cash drive or supply drive or something else, but there are other ways that we can offer support from our gifts and from our heart and from our love for people. If we have a little bit of that creativity and have faith that God wants to empower even the small gestures. What are the ways that we can look at how life has been before this and what we're learning about life during this that can give us a new perspective, not only for now, but for going forward? This week at Bible study, I was talking with Jay and Bruce and Jenny and Walter and Nancy and Brent, and they all had amazing ideas and insight about noticing we thought the world had to look this way before because we just got used to it and stuck in it. And now we're seeing that maybe we could be handling things differently because we're forced to handle them differently now. Are we able to see and support people who are on the margins where before maybe we took them for granted and forgot them? Are we able to change our behaviors to take care of the earth that God has given us in a way that, again, maybe we took for granted and thought, well, it's easier for me to do this thing even if it has some bad impacts? Whereas now, again, we're forced to do things that scale ourselves back, that change our behaviors and our impact, and we can see that we're actually resilient and able to do that. And there's many ways that many of you may think of to do exactly that. Notice, what is it that we thought the world had to be one way? And especially if it was to be dramatic, to keep certain types of people and systems in power that actually hurt others. Whereas now we're seeing, when we have to step back, that like Jesus, if we recognize how we can even sacrifice some things ourselves, look at things differently ourselves, that in fact, if we can hold on to that behavior and continue it in the future, maybe this can have an amazing new way of understanding the world and interacting with people, caring for things that are often overlooked, empowering and loving people who are typically left out, that we're learning to do in a better way than we did before when we were in a different type of rut that maybe didn't feel so stuck, but was its own thing that guided us in a way that maybe we needed to be more mindful of. I think that's a great thing that we can do in our sacred space with God in the coming week. Think about that, meditate on that, ask people to be brought to our minds that we can offer some sort of support to. And I hope that that's something that we can even share together as a community, again, as part of our connection through God's Spirit. Comment on Facebook on this thread, or just on the page, if there are people that you know that need to be looked out for, or call me, or email me, to make sure that we as a community are rallying together around as many people as we can, in whatever ways that we can, even if they seem small and insignificant, God will make them powerful. And share ideas of what you're noticing as you're seeing, well, life is different this way, but it's given me a new insight in the way that life was before, and maybe I want that to change my life going forward. I'd love to see all the ideas and things that people are noticing and being creative about, and that can encourage and spur the rest of us on as well. And so we're going to wrap up our service in that spirit now, and I'll offer you a benediction as you go into your lives this week. Even if they feel stuck, even if they feel smaller, even if they feel more mundane, go in the grace and peace of God. go in the power of Jesus that can not only do something miraculous and dramatic, but who is willing to do things that are small, are sacrificial, would take apparently glory away, but in fact raise up more power. That is the Spirit that embodies you, even if you're sitting on your couch in your pajamas. Let God's Spirit flow through you to have amazing connection with your loved ones, to offer amazing support to those you know who need it, and to have amazing power for the rest of your life in recognizing what's really important because we are God's family. May God's Spirit be with all of you. May God's Spirit connect all of us. Have a wonderful week. I look forward to seeing comments. I look forward to seeing emails. I look forward to seeing phone calls, hearing phone calls, as we continue forward together.